Welcome to episode 65 of The Recovery Show. This episode is brought to you by Martha, Harriet, and Diane. They used the donation button on our website. Thank you, Martha, Harriet, and Diane, for your generous contributions. This episode is for you. We are friends and family members of alcoholics and addicts who have found a path to serenity and happiness. We who live or have lived with the seemingly hopeless problem of addiction understand, as perhaps few others can. So much depends on our own attitudes, and we believe that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Do you hope that your loved one will get or stay sober? Have you found hope when it seems that that will never happen? Is hope the same as optimism, or not? Yes, today we are going to talk about hope. Before we begin, we would like to state that though we at The Recovery Show may be in a 12-step program, we represent ourselves rather than the program. During this show, we will share our own experiences as they relate to the topic of hope. The opinions expressed here are strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you like and leave the rest. We hope that you will find something in our sharing that speaks to your life. My name is Spencer, and I'm your host today. Joining me is co-host Maria. How are you today, Maria?
I'm good, Spencer. Thanks. Enjoying the little break in the winter that we're getting here. I actually saw some daffodils coming up.
Whoa.
So it's like, oh, that's a sign of hope. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my daffodils are still under about 2 feet of snow. And I also had a conversation with May earlier this week, and so she'll be joining us, as it were, by tape delay throughout our conversation. The first segment of today's episode of The Recovery Show will be our discussion of the topic hope. Following a musical break, we will talk about our lives in recovery, about what's happening in the meetings we attend and in our lives. We will follow that with your email or voice contributions and some brief news about the podcast before closing with another musical break. And if you have thoughts about or questions about what we're talking about today, you know, you can call us at 734-707-8795. Or you can send email to feedback@therecoveryshow.com at any time. And I want to open with a reading.
So this is from May 27th of Courage to Change. There have been days when many of us felt that good times would never come again. After so many disappointments, it seemed too painful to continue to hope. We shut our hearts and minds to our dreams and stopped expecting to find happiness. We weren't happy, but at least we wouldn't be let down anymore. Caring, hoping, wanting, these are risky, but as we recover from the effects of alcoholism, we may find that the risks are worth taking. In time, it may not be enough to simply avoid disappointment. We want more. We want rich, full, exciting lives with joy as well as sorrow. Just finding the willingness to believe that joy can exist in our lives today can be very challenging, but until we make room in our hearts for good times, we may not recognize them when they arrive. Nobody is happy all the time, but all of us are capable of feeling good. We deserve to allow ourselves to experience every bit of joy life has to offer.
All right. Thank you. And I thought that leads pretty nicely into this story that May had to tell us.
Hi. Thanks for having me here to share this experience, because by talking about it, it helps me understand it even more. Over the past several months, my son has been out in California, where he moved with the intention of living as a homeless person. And this was very difficult for me, as you can imagine. And at first he had a cell phone, and every once in a while he'd text, and I knew where he was and that he was okay. But eventually he decided that he shouldn't even have a cell phone or an ID, and he just threw them both away, and so he was really untethered. And at that time, although I think you asked me to talk about hope, I think I want to first say something about faith, and that is that I decided that I needed to have faith that he was going to be okay in the end, even if I didn't know what was happening to him in the middle. And I just kind of tried to be a positive thinker instead of worrying about the bad things that could be happening. I will say it doesn't help that my daughter watches a lot of those crime shows where serial killers take homeless people and, you know, do terrible torture to them. And him not having an ID was really hard, because I had always thought, well, at least if I haven't heard anything, no policeman has found him dead somewhere. But once he didn't have an ID, I thought, who's going to know to tell me what happens to him?
Really?
And I just had to go on faith and positive thinking. I did share one time that I got a phone call from a cell phone I couldn't identify, and a woman had come upon him in a park and heard his story and said, I think your mother would like to know where you are, and would you like to use my cell phone to call her? And he did, and I just thought that was a really wonderful gift from my higher power. First of all, to let me know he was alive and okay, mm-hmm. but also to remind me that there are other good people in the world who could help him, and it didn't need to be me. Mm-hmm. And maybe he needs to be that far away to be his own person outside of my own influence. But anyway, so those were the kind of positive thoughts I was trying to have through this very difficult time. And just keeping in mind that things might have to get worse before they got better, but they would be okay at the end. And then all of a sudden, Friday, so 4 days ago, I should say, he did contact us a few weeks ago and say, I've decided I'd like to start working toward coming back to a normal life and have a cell phone and get my ID back. And can you help me do that? So we were able to send to a homeless shelter an old phone that he could use and to go online and get his Michigan driver's license renewed online for $9 and mailed to him and no questions asked. So that was such a huge reassurance. Then at least we knew where he was and that people knew who he was.
Yeah.
But then we didn't hear from him for kind of a while, and all of a sudden on Friday he texted me, okay, I don't want to live this way anymore, I'm willing to do whatever it takes, treatment or whatever, it's time to ask for real help. Because sometimes he'd say, I need help, and I'd say, tell me what kind of help you want. The temptation, of course, would be to figure everything out for him,
right,
and tell him what to do. But I said, when you have something specific you need help with, let me know. I'm happy to help you. And he said, okay, now he texted, okay, now I need real help and I'm asking you for it. And within 24 hours, he was in a treatment program in California. And so my response to this is cautious optimism, because although it's kind of what we would really be hoping for,
yeah,
I don't want to get too excited about it, because I've seen good things happen that don't go the way I expect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then at the same time, I thought, no, this is a good thing. It's okay to say it's a good thing. It's something positive he's choosing to do. And all I can do is have faith that the next right thing will happen. And so I really came on this idea of faith without, or I'm sorry, hope. I want to have hope without expectations. So I can hope for the best without trying to plan ahead what that outcome is, just that it's moving in a positive direction.
Thanks, May. And I just thought that really connected with the this sentence in the reading, well, a lot of the reading. I will not let fear of disappointment prevent me from enjoying this day. And, you know, May's got some hope. Well, she always had, faith or hope that things would eventually work out. She didn't know how that would happen. And it seems to have happened in a way that was not really expected, you know. But now she's saying, you know, I have hope without expectations. And I, particularly when she's saying, you know, yeah, this is a good thing. It's sort of funny, you know, our loved ones go into treatment and we get scared that it's not going to work.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow, that. Somehow that could be worse than when they were, you know, in their disease, active in their disease. You know, I think about the way that I sort of understood the word hope, the concept, before I came into Al-Anon, is that I was hoping for something. you know, mm-hmm. sort of hope with expectation. I was hoping for a particular outcome usually, you know. I hope I'll get that job. Mm-hmm. I hope this person will like me. And I found it to be very different. I found a different meaning now. But I want to ask you, you know, what was your understanding of hope before Al-Anon, before the program?
Okay, so before the program, you know, I don't think I had a lot of hope. I could really relate to what May was saying about not wanting to get too excited, because, you know, that is the tricky thing about living with people with alcoholism or just having them in your life. There's usually been so many rounds of broken promises and, oh, now this time it'll get better, and then it doesn't. And, you know, and it's just like over and over again, this cycle of like, okay, now I can be hopeful and it's all going to be okay now. And then as soon as you really start to believe that, it all comes crashing down again. And so, like, I really had kind of learned not to hope, that hope was mm-hmm. a scary thing mm-hmm. because hope inevitably led to disappointment. And the more I hoped, the worse it was. It's just like this roller coaster. So the higher you climb, the farther the crash. So yeah, I really didn't have a lot of hope before the program. And I think like other people who would talk about things like sort of touched on this, you know, optimism versus hope thing, mm-hmm. like having a particular outcome in mind. Like I'd hear people talk about like, oh, well, when this happens, then, you know, such and such. And I would just think like, well, we don't know if that's going to happen or not. Like, yeah. I, you know, it seemed kind of naive and yeah.
Yeah. I've got a little bit more of May's story here, that in a way, I think illuminates this difference between hope now, hope then. So let's listen.
I'm so kind of guarded about getting too happy about this good thing happening. I was almost reluctant to share the news with certain people, especially people who aren't in the program, who would think, hooray, all your problems are solved, he's in treatment and everything's going to be okay now, because I know that that might not be the case. And some people understand that. I was especially reluctant to tell my sister. I felt I needed to because I know she's been praying for him and she cares about him. But I knew that if I told her that he went into treatment, it would be like fireworks went off and she would be so happy and excited. And so I just texted her and the phone rang right away and I didn't answer it. I wanted to give myself a little space. And sure enough, she texted me with about a million exclamation points what good news this was, and she was so happy. And after a little while, I did talk to her by phone. What you need to know is that she has been to an Al-Anon meeting once in her life, a long time ago, so she kind of thinks she gets Al-Anon, but she doesn't actively work the program. And I've really wished that for her. I've suggested it a few times and then realized I had to stop talking about it. Mm-hmm. But she does see it working actively in my life, and she's mentioned that to me. And by coincidence or not, she has a son who has a terrible alcohol problem who's in a detox program at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And she said, who would have guessed when we were little girls together that we would be adults with adult sons, both in drug and alcohol rehab programs at the same time in never, different states.
Never would have guessed.
Not where we live. Yeah. So so she was, as I predicted, happy and excited. But then she said something that really threw me. She said, aren't you angry at him? And I have to say, I was really surprised. That thought never crossed my mind. I am not angry at him. I know he has a disease, and I'm frightened that the disease will beat or happen faster than the help mm-hmm. or his ability to get the help he needs. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I don't hold that against him at all. And so I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, all the pain he's put you through being out there where you didn't know where he was or if he was safe or if he was hurt, and you really suffered through that. I think if I were you, I'd be angry because I'm angry at my son. I remember all the things he did that embarrassed us or that we were worried about him, and it makes me really mad. So as usual, I realize that because she's not in the program, she kind of serves as an example to me of what I used to be like mm-hmm. before I was in the program. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have all the growth that I've had over the past, I think, 5 years that I've been in the program. And I used to be really angry at my son for having a disease, as if he had any control over that. But I was angry at his behavior. I thought he did things specifically to hurt me. Mm-hmm. I now know that's not true at all. And he apologizes to me all the time. I'm sorry. This must be hard for you. I know that it is. But he's not doing it to hurt me,
yeah.
even though he can do things to push my buttons.
Yeah.
But he's not doing these things to hurt me. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that. Something else I realized that I haven't shared with you, Spencer, is that my sister was saying that out of concern for me. And my fear was that talking to her would get my hopes up too high and mm-hmm. I would start having expectations, and I had mm-hmm. to guard against that. But actually she was sharing with me how much she cared for me and suffered right along with me mm-hmm. while I was worried about him. And I have to look at it that way and be appreciative of that. At the same time appreciating that I'm not angry. I'm just taking it one day at a time, as I know he has to. And but still with tremendous gratitude, first of all, that we have the resources to help him find that place and be in that place, that he has the amount of program that he has to make use of that place, and then most of all for Al-Anon helping me to step back and be able to let him do his own thing out there and continue to take care of myself here.
And I think she must have told this to me afterwards. She said another thing her sister said was, you know, when your son comes home, your dog is going to be so happy to see him. And we both thought, wow, that is, you know, that's, I mean, it's a very interesting statement that about expectation and about, you know, how things are. I think she was using the dog being happy as sort of a metaphor for the whole family being happy. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we know that that may or may not happen. And, you know, it is tricky. I don't know. You have any thoughts about May's story?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like just a rough experience. But I really liked the way she had put about how she had to have hope or faith that it would turn out in the end, even though she didn't know what was happening in the middle. And I don't know, that speaks to me about that. You don't know what's happening right now. And we kind of can't know. And you have to just have faith that it will work out in the end. And we won't know what the details are. And we won't know whether he's coming to home, whether the dog will be happy. You know, we don't know any of that, but having faith that the end result will work out somehow, some way.
And also knowing that sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes it doesn't.
And so I was inspired to this topic because a couple weeks ago, the sermon topic was about hope. And and she quoted, or she spoke about, the minister spoke about this thing called the Stockdale Paradox, which sort of illuminates a difference between the effect of optimism versus faith or hope in dealing with adverse situations. Stockdale was a POW in Vietnam. He was a fighter pilot and was shot down. And so I picked this little segment up from Wikipedia. Thanks, Wikipedia. In a business book by James C. Collins called Good to Great, Collins writes about a conversation he had with Stockdale regarding his coping strategy during his period in the Vietnamese POW camp. He's, quote, "I never lost faith in the end of the story. I never doubted not only that I would get out, but also that I would prevail in the end and turn the experience into the defining event of my life, which in retrospect I would not trade." When Collins asked who didn't make it out of Vietnam, Stockdale replied, "Oh, that's easy. The optimists. Oh, they were the ones who said, 'We're going to be out by Christmas.' And Christmas would come, and Christmas would go. Then they'd say, 'We're going to be out by Easter.' And Easter would come, and Easter would go. And then Thanksgiving, and then it would be Christmas again, and they died of a broken heart." Stockdale then added, "This is a very important lesson. You must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end, which you can never afford to lose, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be." And I thought that was, you know, really, like, for me, just pointed out that having what we, you know, an optimist is one who assumes that the best outcome is going to occur. Mm-hmm. And how damaging that can be when you're in a situation where the outcome that you're expecting doesn't occur over and over again. And, you know, that certainly had been my experience with alcoholism, that my wife would go to treatment and I would say, "Okay, this time it's going to work." And, you know, she'd be sober for a while and then she'd relapse. And then she'd go to treatment again and say, "Okay, this time it's going to work. This time it's going to work for sure." Mm-hmm. And, you know, this went on, and eventually, I mean, that could have, it really could have, I think it did break me down for a while. And I had to redefine what hope meant for me, because hope obviously did not mean this time for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I refused to give up on the idea that she could find sobriety sometime. Mm-hmm. And so I came to understand, and people would say to me, "How can you have hope when she keeps relapsing like that?" And I would say, hope is not about the outcome today. You know, hope is about the possibility of change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Martin Luther King, in his dream speech that he made at the Lincoln Memorial, he said, among a lot of other things, he said, "With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope." And as our minister said on Sunday, you know, he didn't say, "From our great shining ambitions, we'll have a, you know, this wonderful future." He said, "No, you know, we currently have a mountain of despair, and we will hew a small stone of hope from it. And that hope will carry us forward." How does that... I don't know. What does that say to you? It's sort of what it says to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it kind of points out that hope and despair are linked and kind of made of the same stuff in a way. So, you know, what you're despairing about is sort of the lack of hope, or the, you know what I mean? Like, it's the mountain of despair is all about what you're hoping for. It's just... It's almost just like looking at the same thing in a different light. It's not going to happen, therefore you have despair. Or it is going to happen, therefore you have hope. So it's kind of, I don't know, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So in your experience, you know, as I recall it, you were in the program for a while before your loved one got sober.
Yes.
How did you find yourself moving between despair and hope and maybe back? Can you think back to that?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, it was tricky. And I think part of it, I mean, I think you kind of have to have hope in order to even do anything. Like, in some ways, just showing up at an Al-Anon meeting is an act of hope. Because it was like, well, I don't know what to do, but maybe there's something here that will help me. I don't know. So I'm here. And then once I got there, you know, there was that part in the step one reading that I didn't want to hear about how we won't promise your loved ones will get sober. It's like, no, you're supposed to promise, you know, but I guess that would be, you know, back to the optimism again, which makes me think of the phrase blind optimism. Yeah. Whereas hope seems more like not blind optimism, like, something. But anyway, as far as, I guess, coming to these meetings, I kind of got a sense of hope for things other than the alcoholic getting sober.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as, you know, there's a part in the opening that is usually read at the meetings that I go to anyway, that says, and this sentence has, it gave me a lot of hope during that time when I was, you know, living with active alcoholism and, you know, didn't know when or if that situation was going to change. But I can read out, it says, "We too were lonely and frustrated, but in Al-Anon we discovered that no situation is really hopeless and that it is possible for us to find contentment and even happiness whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not." And I remember hearing that and thinking, really? Even if they're still drinking, how can I find contentment? How can I be happy? You know, and it just seemed kind of too good to be true. But the more I learned about the program, I learned that, you know, there are ways for me to detach and there are ways for me to take care of myself and there are ways for me to find happiness, whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not. And, you know, it seemed like a tall order, but I was around other people who had done that. And so I kind of just tried to talk to them more about, well, how do you do that? And because I want to do that too. So yeah, kind of having hope about things other than someone else's disease outcome or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I asked my friend Mark if he could contribute something for the show, and he sent this.
Hey, Spencer, this is Mark from recoveredcast.com, and I wanted to be able to share on your topic this week on hope. But it was difficult for me to call in and to provide a share because this week, quite frankly, I haven't been feeling it. I've been falling into a little bit of despair, and this is how I'm powerless over alcohol, is because although there's no active alcoholism in my life today, other people's use affects the way I think and the way I behave. And quite frankly, I've fallen into despair over circumstances that I'm powerless over. And so fear comes into my life. But our literature says leading another person from despair to hope and love brings comfort to both the giver and the receiver. And that has been true for me today, Spencer. I went to my home group Saturday morning, and just that simple process of suiting up and showing up, even though I don't feel like it, has given me the ability to be able to say these things, to share my feelings. And thereby, I receive hope. I don't understand it. All I know is that it works. And I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, thereby I receive hope. Just sort of what you were saying, you know. I know when I first started in Al-Anon, I picked up the book How Al-Anon Works. And this was a period of my life where I was having trouble sleeping at night. I was having trouble getting to sleep. I would wake up in the middle of the night and I'd have trouble getting back to sleep. Because so much was just going around in my head, worries and so on. And I could pick up the book and, you know, I could read somebody else's story and I could see that they were in a similar place to where I was. Situation, you know, might not be my exact situation, but that through the use of the tools of the Al-Anon program and the support of the program, they found a way to a better life. And it might or might not have been with their loved one getting sober. Because And as you were talking about the opening reading, I thought about the first step description in the book How Ellen Allen Works, and it ends with this paragraph. It's as if we are lost in a desert, not far away as a freshwater stream, but until now we have failed to notice it because we have been chasing a mirage, an imaginary oasis that recedes whenever we approach. Only when we finally stop, take stock of what our efforts have produced, and admit that we have been pursuing an illusion, can we turn in a direction that will actually meet our needs. Likewise, when we let go of the illusion of power over alcohol and over other people, we move in a more positive, productive, and rewarding direction. We move toward hope. And so there, the literature is telling us that we can find hope for ourselves. We can find hope that our life can improve. It doesn't say, we move towards our loved one getting sober. Mm-hmm. But we do move toward hope because we move toward something that can help us, as opposed to, what we've been doing, which for most of us, certainly for me, was not helping me, and it wasn't helping my loved one, and it wasn't helping the family. It just wasn't helping, period. I don't know. Do you have thoughts about what Mark had to say, too?
Yeah. I really liked what Mark had to say about suiting up and showing up and just doing the work. Like, even when you don't feel like it. And because that has been kind of my experience lately of just, I'm here today doing this podcast because, Spencer, I think we were originally talking about doing this episode on hope a week and a half ago. I saw you at a meeting and you asked me, hey, do you want to talk about hope on Sunday? And the very first thought that went through my mind was, ooh, gee, I don't know if I have time for hope. And then I caught myself. I listened to that sentence sounding in my head, and I'm like, wow, I don't have time for hope. What do I have time for? I have plenty of time for panic and worry and fear and running around doing things and all kinds of negativity, and I have time for not sleeping at night. But time for hope? Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I have time for that. And I was like, wow, I really need to change directions here. And somehow, even though there's a lot going on, I need to make time for hope. That's why I'm here, because I just realized I really needed to do that. I've been kind of going through a lot of some crazy stuff and had really kind of fallen into this self-pity, everything's terrible, catastrophizing kind of thing. Basically, I had been going through some infertility issues and had gotten a diagnosis about 2 months ago now, where it was basically like, oh, things are not good. You may need to go do... It's looking like IVF might be your only real possibility here. And it was just such a shock because I, had no idea that this was coming. This was the first that we'd heard about it. And so, there was a lot of freaking out going on. Like, what? Like, maybe what's going to happen? Maybe we'll never have kids. Maybe we have to do this procedure, which is like super invasive and medical and scary and also crazy expensive and like just really gonna change everything. And there are just a lot of downsides to it. But it was like the choice seemed to be either that or we just give up and don't have a family or, so it just seemed like negative options on all sides and just really overwhelming. And it was kind of a... like, well, we can maybe do this thing, but you really don't have much time left. So if you're going to do it, you got to do it now, hurry up, make decisions. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just a lot of pressure all at once. And I'd been really spending a bunch of time just freaking out, basically, and kind of having an Al-Anon relapse, if you will, into just, like the self-pity, everything's terrible, catastrophizing, awful stuff. And But I had been sort of catching up on other episodes of the podcast, and there was one on changed attitudes, and I thought, oh yeah, I probably could use one of those.
A changed attitude?
A changed attitude, yeah. I could probably use one of those. And there was one on relapse that kind of made me realize, oh, I'm having an Al-Anon relapse right now. And so then you asked me to do this episode on hope, and I thought, yeah, this is what I need to do. Like, as Mark was saying, I need to suit up and show up and do an episode on hope so that I can start getting myself thinking along those terms, because we did end up deciding to go ahead with the IVF, which is scary and expensive, and, you know, there's, yeah, all kinds of weird things,
and
frightening medicines and shots and stuff, and so... You know, but it's like the whole point of it is that there may be hope at the end of it. And that's the whole point. And and I had really gotten myself so worked up about the scary negative aspects of it that I had totally lost sight of the hope. And so it's like, gee, I have an opportunity here to do a podcast about hope. I think I need to take it. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I want to bring May back into the conversation here. To talk about how she has hope now.
Okay.
Yes, that's such a good point. I was thinking that I think what I thought was hope was maybe wishes or wanting something and striving towards it or wishing for it. So I used hope in that way. Whereas now I think I use hope as I don't know how to say it except hope, hoping, wanting and believing in something good happening, but not necessarily knowing what that good thing is.
Yeah. So yeah. There we have hope.
Oh, yeah.
Hope as a, as I said to you the other day, hope is an intransitive verb that we just hope. We don't hope for a particular outcome. And, it's an emotion, it's emotion, but it's also an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Our minister had a reading, and I don't know where it came from or I would have found it, but it talked about a surgeon who was advising a family whose loved one was going in for some risky surgery. I think for a cancer, I don't remember the details. And he advised them that they should cultivate an attitude of hope rather than an attitude of optimism. And that would help them get through, you know, the surgery and what came after. I think, you know, that generally with cancer, the surgery is not the end of the story. It's the beginning of the story. And I thought, oh, okay. I can sort of see that.
Also, if I could add about what May just said about hoping but not necessarily knowing, hoping for a good outcome but not necessarily knowing what that outcome will be.
Yes.
I really like that, and I'm trying to cultivate that sort of sense of hope for myself. I mean, obviously, you know, trying this sort of thing, like there is a specific outcome that's the desired outcome. Otherwise, I would not be trying all of this. But at the same time, I feel like I need to have hope either way. Like, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, maybe that's part of some larger plan that is going to be good for me in some other way that I just don't understand yet. And either way, it's going to be good. And that's the kind of hope that I need to have. There was something in one of the stories in the back of the How Al-Anon Works book where someone was sharing about how it's okay to want a certain outcome, but it's just that she had to be willing to accept her higher power's will, even if the higher power's will was not the outcome that she wanted. So it's like, it's okay to want something. You just have to be able to be able to prioritize that. And if your higher power wants something else, like, well, okay. And it makes me think of So I have a good friend who's Muslim, and there's a practice that she has where basically whatever she's talking about the future, she'll say something about like, oh, yes, you know, tomorrow we'll do such and such, inshallah, which means God willing. And, you know, in the beginning, this was before I was in the program, and I didn't really have much of a God concept personally. And so I was sort of, you know, trying to be accepting, but eventually, like, after a little while, it kind of started to rub me the wrong way a little bit. Like, really, every single time we mention anything in the future, like, this has to come up. We have to talk about God. But then, like, the more I had been in the program, the more I started to really like the idea, because it's like this practice, this spiritual practice of constantly reminding herself that, you know, we can talk about the future, we can make plans, we can say what we would like to have happen, but we are not in control. We don't really know what's going to happen, and it all depends if God is willing or not. And like, every time that comes up, to kind of throw that in there, just as a reminder that we're not in control, and I really like it now.
Not in control of the world. You know, yeah. When you were talking about your situation, I thought back to when our children were born, and we went through fertility treatments. We did not have to go all the way to IVF, thank goodness. I don't know if we could have afforded it at that point in our lives. You know, but with each step along the way, you know, we continue to have hope that, well, this, you know, we will eventually have children. Mm-hmm. And we did. We had two at once, which, you know, was a little bit of a shock because, hey, that wasn't the outcome we were looking for. Mm-hmm. We were warned. Mm-hmm. It was with that particular treatment, there was a 25% chance of, as they put it, twins or better.
Okay.
I was like, better. Oh, that means more, right? Oh, that's actually better. At least with twins, you can do one-on-one, you know? Unless you have a non-traditional family, I suppose. And the kids were born, and, you know, it was great. We had these babies, and they were, you know, they were a little small because they had to come early because we had to induce labor to sort of actually save my wife's life to some extent. And then I think it might have been the next day, our daughter got sick. Mm-hmm. And she got really sick. And she went into the ICU. I don't think I understood hope in adversity back then. You know, we hoped for her to live. Mm-hmm. We hoped for her to, you know, come through this thing. But as you said, and as Mark said, all we could do was suit up and show up, mm-hmm. You know, to come into the NICU at least once a day, probably. I don't even remember now. I mean, it's sort of a blur of, you know, one baby at home, one baby in the hospital, us going back and forth between them. My mother came out to help, which we sorely needed. And just being there and, you know, for a while watching her get sicker, and I'm sure there was fear and despair, and I think there was, you know, hope that she would pull through, a lot of not knowing. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I wish, I can wish for a lot of things. I'm not going to get them. You know, I wish that I could have had, the understanding of hope, the understanding of, you know, God willing, mm-hmm. That I have now, because I didn't have any of that sort of thing to support me. Luckily, I was also just exhausted. And so, know, like I say, it really was a blur. And so, but suiting up and showing up, you know, and one day we came in and they said, well, it looks like she's turned the corner. It was 12 days later. Wow. And something that I'm grateful for now, I don't know how I would feel about it if she hadn't lived, was that they didn't really tell us how bad it was until afterwards. You know, that talking to the doctor afterwards, and he said, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, she was about an 8 in severity. So, you know, we do get through. We did get through. But it could have been easier, maybe, with some hope. May had some thoughts about how to practice this, and the contribution of faith to hope. I asked her that, you know, she had talked about having faith, and what was the connection between faith and hope.
I really hadn't thought about the relationship between faith and hope, because I'm using faith in the same generic term that I'm using hope, which is believing and trusting that things will turn out okay. Mm-hmm. And when I first came into the program, my son was 17 and had a bad drug problem and was in a treatment program. And I eventually got a sponsor, and my sponsor said, believe that he is going to do great things with his life, but it might not be until he's 40. So you don't need to, worry that he's not doing those things or what you think he should be doing right now. And so it's kind of that delayed gratification without expectations. And the other thing that ties to that is what I've learned through the program is that when I'm worried about something or fearful, if I turn that over to my higher power, things happen that I couldn't have written that script. I couldn't have predicted it. It's better than what I could have come up with that I didn't know was one of the options. Yeah. And I think practicing that a little bit at a time and then in bigger and bigger things, that is what cultivates hope, because you start seeing that you can't predict all the things that could happen. You can't name all the outcomes. So why just pick one? There are better ones out there that you don't even know. And that, I think, is what enables me to have hope, especially when my son was in this kind of black box of, I had no idea. Yeah. The only outcomes I could think of were bad ones, mm-hmm. except that I did kind of think, this could be a bottom. What could be his bottom that could make him seek help, listen to the right person? I didn't know. So having that, practicing in small ways, turning things over, taught me that.
And, you know, I certainly find that to be true for a lot of things in this program. You know, letting go. Mm-hmm. Let go of the small things and eventually learn how to let go of the bigger things. Do you have thoughts on what May had to say, Maria?
Yeah, I like the idea of practicing, because it's kind of like the idea of suiting up and showing up, except, sometimes physically, but sometimes also just mentally, suiting up, showing up. Like, okay, I don't have time for fear and worry and panic and chaos anymore. I need to make time for hope. And I'm going to practice, you know, thinking that this may turn out well in the long run, even though that's kind of counter to everything I used to do before the program. Just kind of practicing that change in attitude.
So I connected what she had to say with something that we're starting to do at work. There's a martial art concept named kata, which is a form that you practice over and over again. And, you know, it has no real practical application. It's training your muscles to do the right thing when you get into a situation where you need to use that particular move. And in the context of work, we're computer programmers, so this is a programming exercise that is fairly simple, that you can do it maybe in an hour, and that you've done before and you'll do again. And when you're done, you throw it away. Because the point is not the end product. The point is learning the doing. The point is learning how to do it, maybe with a new technique that you're not comfortable with yet, and just do it over and over and over again, so that when you're sitting down to solve a real problem, you don't have to think about the how. You only have to think about the why and the what. And this sort of practicing in small things felt like that to me. Mm-hmm. You were talking about changing attitude and May had an observation about attitude, about hope, about not expecting an outcome, and how her how she's changed the way she expresses that, I think is the best way to put it.
Something that I've learned in the program that kind of applies to this situation. When I first started in the program, if someone would ask me how my son was doing, I'd kind of roll my eyes and say, he's on his own path. Like they'd say, where is he, or where is he in school, or mm-hmm. does he have a job? I'd say, oh, he's on his own alternative path, and I'd kind of roll my eyes and shake my head.
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know, what message is that sending to him or the world?
Yeah.
It's certainly not sending the message that I have faith that things are going to turn out.
Right.
He is on his own path. He is doing his own thing, and he's going to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And so I started trying to say it as if I really believe that. He's on his own path, you know, and,
yeah.
and instead of rolling my eyes, say it as if it's a good thing. And that was that kind of deliberately practicing a certain way of looking at something in a mm-hmm. different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really helped me. And I can't help thinking that sending those vibes out to the world in some way helps him or somebody else. But it helped me in the way I think
yeah.
thought about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wish that we had a little video here, because the difference between your facial expression when you said that those two different times, I mean, the first time you did, you rolled your eyes, you kind of, you know, looked away and, like, you know, gave this funny little grin. And, and the second time you were looking straight at me and with confidence and, you know, and it just, I mean, it really emphasized the difference between the two, not just the tone of voice. Yeah. Practice.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and you know, what is it? What is the expression? Acting our way into right thinking. You know, I'm not comfortable with this in my head yet, but I can do the actions, and when I do the actions, it brings the understanding, it brings the comfort. Yeah, and as I was listening to myself there, I thought about, you know, the recommendation that if you smile, you will feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a funny thing, but it's you know, our mind is not as much in control of our body as we sometimes like to think it is, and there's a real feedback there.
Yeah.
And it works for all kinds of things. If I'm sitting in a meeting and I'm sort of slumped back and in my chair and I'm bored, and if I sit up and lean forward and look at the person who's speaking, just that act of acting as if I'm engaged actually makes me more engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have definitely found that to be true with the principles of this program as well.
Yeah, I feel like hope is sort of like, in some ways it works kind of the same way that like every other tool in this program works. That like, you know, before I came in, I didn't really have any hope, didn't really have any tools. You know, hope just seemed to... It used to just seem like this naive, wide-eyed, innocent, like Pollyanna-ish, like everything's going to be great. You know, like you're just like about to be, you know, you're just waiting for life to smack you down and put you in your place. And so you better not have hope. And also I was around other people who kind of felt that way. And so if I said anything hopeful or optimistic, I feel like I would get a reaction that would be like an eye roll or a, oh brother, here we go, you know, that kind of a thing. So like, it was much cooler to be cynical. But again, like a lot of other things with the program, you know, my own tools, my own usual habits didn't work. It didn't get me anywhere. Like you know, when I had this relapse that I was talking about, mm-hmm. I was stressing out. I was not sleeping. I was, you know, staying up till 3 a.m. looking things up on the internet. You know, all of these things that just weren't really helpful. And it's just like, okay, it was kind of like my initial coming into Al-Anon. Was like, all right, what I usually do is getting me nowhere. It's completely negative. Things are just getting worse. I have to try something else, even if it feels silly, even if it doesn't feel natural. I just need to practice something else. And so yeah, I've been trying to just stop with the worrying and panic and whatever, and try some of the other tools. One thing that I always hear somebody in meetings repeat a lot is that faith takes practice. And I think, you know, it's the same thing with hope. Having an attitude of hope takes practice. So.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I feel like that for me, having faith, mm-hmm. faith in a higher power or faith in the program or, you know, faith in my ability to live through things, mm-hmm. Faith that there are good people in the world who maybe want to help, mm-hmm. you know, as that unknown woman did for May when she loaned May's son her phone, that having that faith makes it easier to keep an attitude of hope when things are not going the way I want them to. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think about tools that I used during the period of active drinking after I'd been in the program for a while that helped me to keep hope alive. And I thought, you know, one of them was understanding the disease concept, mm-hmm. that by understanding it was a disease, by understanding that my loved one was not doing these things out of spite or anger or whatever, not doing them to me, but that they were symptoms of her disease. I think that helped to reduce the negative thinking and helps to keep hope forward. And if it's a disease, then, you know, it can be treated. Mm-hmm. If it's a willful behavior, that's a little harder.
Yeah, true.
But also all of the little tools of the program or not so little tools of the program, things like letting go, things like prayer and meditation, mm-hmm. All of those helped. Things like acceptance of what is now, mm-hmm. Enables me to see more clearly what could be. It's ironic and paradoxical that by accepting that things are in the shitter right now, it gives me the mental space to see and to understand that they don't have to be that way forever. Mm-hmm. When I'm focusing on the bad situation right now and how awful it is, it's really hard to see that I could get out of it, that we could get out of it. And when I'm able to say, yeah, this is what is, and I can't do anything about it right now, so I'm going to stop obsessing over it. Mm-hmm. Now I can look forward and I can, you know, I can look up. I can see that, yeah, it's really dark and cloudy here, but there's a line of sunlight on the horizon. And I don't know when it's going to get here, but it is over there. The sun is still shining above the clouds, you know? Mm-hmm. And that gives me hope.
Yeah.
Because clouds don't usually stick around forever. Okay. Wow. All those metaphors. do you have any last thoughts?
Yeah. You know, actually, when I was thinking about hope and hope and this program and what it's, you know, hope for what exactly, it made me think of the gift of Al-Anon, which is a thing that it's in some of the literature somewhere. Oh, wait, here we go. From Survival to Recovery is apparently the book. I don't have the book, but I just had looked this up because I'd heard people read this out in meetings before. So I thought maybe this might be a good thing to read out. Yeah. So, all right. Hope and help, the gifts of Al-Anon. If we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. We will become mature, responsible individuals with a great capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. Though we may never be perfect, continued spiritual progress will reveal to us our enormous potential. We will discover that we are both worthy of love and loving. We will love others without losing ourselves, and will learn to accept love in return. Our sight, once clouded and confused, will clear, and we will be able to perceive reality and recognize truth. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. We will be able to risk failure to develop new hidden talents. Our lives, no matter how battered and degraded, will yield hope to share with others. We will begin to feel and will come to know the vastness of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. As we gain the ability to forgive our families, the world, and ourselves, our choices will expand. With dignity, we will stand for ourselves, but not against our fellows. Serenity and peace will have meaning for us as we allow our lives and the lives of those we love to flow day by day with God's ease, balance, and grace. No longer terrified, we will discover we are free to delight in life's paradox, mystery, and awe. We will laugh more, fear will be replaced by faith, and gratitude will come naturally as we realize that our higher power is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves.
And as it says in the AA Big Book, are these extravagant promises?
We think not. That's the answer.
Yeah. And actually, my friend Mark likes to say, yes, they are extravagant promises, and they will come true. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, puts a little bit of a different, it makes it more significant almost to me. Those are sometimes also called the promises of Al-Anon, but that's not their, I guess, official name. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want to introduce our song that we're going to break with before we continue with our lives in recovery?
Yes. Let's see. Okay. All right, so our song right now is Faith by George Michael. So this is a song about basically he's got this offer of a relationship that he thinks will be probably a great physical relationship, but sort of emotionally devastating. And so he's thinking about, you know, do I want to do this or not? And he ends up turning it down. And as he says, you know, he's got to have faith because he's got to have faith that something more will come, that he doesn't have to just, you know, take whatever offer is on hand, that he can turn this down because there will be something better that also has the emotional component that he's looking for. So it's kind of about making decisions now that are not easy in the short term, but are based on having this faith that the long term will work out. So some of the lyrics to this song. Before this river becomes an ocean, before you throw my heart back on the floor, oh baby, I reconsider my foolish notion. Well, I need someone to hold me, but I'll wait for something more, because I gotta have faith.
In this section of the podcast, we talk about our lives in recovery, about what's happening in our meetings and in our lives this week. And I'll go ahead here. So if you've been listening along in order, you'll notice that last week I put up a best of episode, or if you prefer, a recycled episode, because I was out of town on the weekend. I was going to a youth conference for my church, and that is always exhausting. We start Friday evening and go through till Sunday morning, sleeping on the floor in a church and staying up late. And usually there's, you know, some emotion and drama and stuff happening there because they are teenagers. And so the week before, I was sort of stressing about, well, how am I going to do that and do this podcast episode on hope? And I didn't have anybody signed up to, you know, co-host with me yet. And I think actually I was talking to you, Maria, at the Wednesday night meeting. And I said, you know what? I need to take care of myself here and not push myself to do too much this weekend. And then I felt this great relief, like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. Wow. You know, it really had been weighing on my mind. And so I took the self-care option and put up actually the most downloaded episode of the past year, which is the one on detachment. Uh-huh. And it had been over a year. So I figured, hey, you know, except for the people who go back and, you know, play through the whole binge on the whole playlist again, might be good to put it up there. So that's what I did. And that's why, you know, I wasn't here live last week. And, I went to, actually went to three meetings this week, which is the meetings that I usually go to. And over the last month or so, I've been missing one or another. On Wednesday, the topic was step three, with a slant towards understanding what is God's will versus my will. And there was some really good sharing there on that topic. And of course, you know, we had done that episode fairly recently, and I remembered none of it when I was ready to share. I talked about an experience early in my recovery when I understood what God's will was for a particular situation that had been weighing on me for a couple of years, how to resolve a question. And you know, one night I heard the answer. It was a very interesting experience. Like, never happened again. But mostly I hear through other people, which is why I go to a lot of meetings. Because if I'm only hearing my voice, it's not so healthy, generally speaking. On Saturday, our meeting topic was step one, which I've had a lot of step one meetings. And this is, you know, we rotate through the steps in that meeting, and we were just around to step one. It wasn't because we had a newcomer. I must be feeling powerless over some things in my life and needing that reminder of that, you know, that is the first step, is recognizing my powerlessness over whatever it might be. But at the end of the meeting, one of the people at the table said, you know, we're planning for this gratitude day in April, and I'm supposed to be finding speakers. And so I'm just putting it out here. If anybody wants to be a speaker, you know, talk to me after the meeting. And I thought, I think this is an opportunity or another growth opportunity for growth or recovery dropped in my lap here. And so, after a little bit of thought, you know, put aside whatever fears I might have and said, okay, because this, I think gratitude day, you know, it's sort of an open talk. I mean, I don't know if it's an open talk, but it's an open thing. It's not restricted to Al-Anon members. And so, and I went over and said, you know, I don't know if you want like a particular topic or what, but, I'm willing to be a speaker if you want me. So my name's on a list somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I have to let go of what happens. And I thought, you know, what do I have to say about gratitude, right? and if that's what they want people to talk about, I mean, I don't know. So a little nervous, but, you know, I talk a lot. I'll probably do fine. Anyway, my week. How was yours?
Okay. My week, let's see. Sunday, I met with my sponsor. You know, this week and the past little while have been a little different for me. I guess the past couple of months have been much more crazy, chaotic, if you will. Just a whole bunch of intense medical stuff going on. So I haven't been making it exactly to my normal meetings. I haven't really been on my normal meeting schedule. But I've been kind of trying to work on my program in other ways. Like, I've been You know, at one point I came across something in Courage to Change about how sometimes our higher power uses illness as a way of convincing us that we need to take care, better care of ourselves. And so I've been working a lot on self-care, and I've been trying to, actually one thing I heard on, I don't remember which episode it was. It might've been Tradition 3, I think, because Ruth was talking about, Ruth had mentioned something about a 2-week meditation challenge. And I was listening to this right at a time when it just really sounded appealing. I think the way she put it was, if you meditate twice a day for 2 weeks, your life will change. And I heard this at a time when my life was like completely crazy, chaotic, out of control. And I was like, oh my God, I need my life to change. I'll do that. You know, it just kind of came up. And it's like, well, you know, meditation, I, in theory, want to be working on this anyway. So yeah, I'll try this. I will make a commitment to really do it every morning and every night for the next 2 weeks and just see what happens. Because, you know, again, sort of like coming into Al-Anon, like, I'm desperate. I don't know what this is or what it's going to do, but I'll try whatever. So so I've been working on that, and it's been good. You know, at least, so I've been doing like 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening. And, you know, and I don't know if it's really exactly meditating that I'm necessarily doing, but I'm sitting there with my eyes closed trying to not think about too many things, you know, trying to not really think too much, but at least it's sort of a break for at least those few minutes. I can kind of get out of my usual mental habit of feeling like I gotta be doing stuff, I gotta be fixing things, I gotta, like, what do I have to do now? I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to, you know. And it's like, no, it's okay to just sit here and just be for at least these 10 minutes. You know, that's all. I don't have to do anything. I can just be. And that's been really, really nice, and it does sort of calm me down, which I've been really needing. So that's been good. And I've also sort of instituted a sort of a nightly ritual sort of thing. So I'll start with my 10 minutes of meditation and then do, you know, another 5-10 minutes of knitting, sort of like wind down kind of thing, and then get ready for bed and like try to get to sleep at a reasonable hour. No more 3 a.m. internet searching for me, hopefully. Yay. Because that's just a black hole. So that's been good. So that's sort of what a lot of my, yeah, that and just kind of trying to mentally practice hope. You know, when I catch myself going into that spiral of like panic and what if none of this works out and oh my God, there's so many things to do beforehand and like, oh, we got to do this, we got to do that, and blah, you know, just kind of trying to stop with all of that and, you know, just redirect my mind to somewhere a little more positive.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it works better than others.
Of course.
So Wednesday I went to that same meeting where we talked about step three, and I've been, you know, it kind of got me thinking that like with all this medical stuff, like in the beginning there was the initial like question of like, well, what do I do? Do I do this? Do we do that? You know, like, and the not knowing and the having to like plan out the whole rest of your life in the next month or so was kind of a lot of pressure. But you know, once we did kind of decide what to do and move forward, it was kind of liberating in a way. And it kind of occurred to me that it's sort of like, you know, like working the 12 steps on that, like powerless. My life was definitely unmanageable. And then, you know, eventually we did make a decision to proceed with this procedure, and somehow having made the decision, it makes it easier to just say, well, this is what we're doing, and I don't have to panic about whether it's a good idea or not. The decision's been made, so like, end of story, stop with the panic already, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's been nice, and it's also like, I mean, it's still a little iffy. You know, I wouldn't say Western medicine is exactly my higher power, but I've kind of made a decision to entrust my will and my life to it for the moment, for the time being. So, you know, as uneasy as I am about that, I've made a decision. So, like, I can just kind of go forward and, you know, I need to just trust the process.
Yeah.
And, you know, do what they tell me to do and see if it works. So yeah, that's what I was thinking about with that. And, oh, and I also had an opportunity to, where I was forced to realize that I had to ask for help. Yeah. So that was a practice in having to reach out and get, you know, reach out outside of my comfort zone and ask for help with stuff that I wanted to just do myself, but I learned that it was not a good idea. You shouldn't try to do this yourself. So ask for help. And that went okay. So it's good to know that if I do push myself outside my comfort zone, like there is support there. I can ask for help and receive help. So, hey, cool. So yeah, that's pretty much been my week. Getting sort of ready, psyched up for all of this, stuff that's, gonna be happening soon. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, when thinking about this, you know, I always say, hey, next week's topic's going to be this or that or the other thing. And then, you know, maybe something happens and it's not next week's topic. And also trying to find people for the show. If I only know what I'm doing 1 week ahead and maybe people would like to do one topic, not another, or maybe I'm being codependent. I don't know. I thought, well, I'm going to pick a bag full of topics and say, these are the ones that are coming up. And then I can I'll have a little flexibility without feeling like I'm, betraying or something. So that said, the upcoming topics will include codependency, which is, we talk a lot about codependency and every now and then somebody says, so what is codependency anyway? So we'll talk about that. Forgiveness. Amazingly, we have not talked about forgiveness yet. So that's a good one. And coming up into April, we'll be talking about tradition 4. So we welcome your thoughts. You can join the conversation. Please leave us a voicemail or send us an email with your experience, strength, and hope, or your questions. And Maria, how can people send us feedback?
Well, you can call and leave us a voicemail at 734-707-8795. You can call right now to 734-707-8795. You can also use the voicemail button on the website to join the conversation from your computer. If you prefer not to use your voice, you can send email to feedback@therecoveryshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. Share your experience, strength, and hope, or your questions about today's topic of hope or upcoming topics, codependency, forgiveness, and tradition 4. If you have a topic you'd like us to talk about, let us know.
And hey, Maria, where can our listeners find out more about The Recovery Show?
Our website, therecoveryshow.com, has all the information about the show, including notes for each episode, a blog with periodic meditations, and links to the music we play. We've also got some links to other recovery podcasts and websites that we like. There are many ways to contribute to the content of the podcast and the website. You can leave comments on the blog, or you can take a look at our suggested topic list. If you see a topic you'd like covered, leave a comment there to vote it up. If you don't see the topic you're interested in, let us know and we'll get right on it. If you're inspired or ambitious, think about contributing a guest meditation or a meditation prompt, usually a quote or song lyric. If you'd like the meditations emailed to you, click on the email button at the top right corner of the page to sign up. If you'd really like to join the conversation, literally, consider being a guest host by phone, Skype, or Google Hangout. Email feedback@therecoveryshow.com if you're interested. So, Spencer, do we have any voicemails, emails, or comments this week?
We do. But first we're going to listen to another song. This is Stand in the Rain by Super Chick. And I hear this as a song about somebody where, you know, things are not going well in her life. And the chorus... the chorus gives her this advice. So stand in the rain, stand your ground, Stand up when it's all crashing down. You stand through the pain, you won't drown. And one day what's lost can be found. You stand in the rain. And I find that hope enables me to stand in the rain.
She never slows down. She doesn't know why, but she knows that when she's all alone, feels like it's all coming down. She won't turn around.
Got a few emails this week. One from Mason says, "Hello, I'm a new listener and I really like your podcast. I'm unable to attend Al-Anon meetings and your show helps to provide suggestions around being in relationship with an alcoholic." She says, "A podcast topic suggestion, living with a partner who's an active alcoholic, how to share space without going crazy." Mm. And Mason, that's you have to believe that is a topic that a lot of people have asked for, and we will do it. I want to get some people who are still living with active alcoholism. You know, my experience is over 8 years old now, I think it would be great to get a contribution from somebody who's still sort of fresh with it. You want to read the one from Charlie?
Sure.
Actually, no, I'll read that because Charlie sent a link to an article. Says, "Spencer, I was fascinated by this article and wanted to share with y'all thought-provoking piece on the topic of serenity." And the title of the article is "Achieving Failure, the Patient Who Cured His Therapist." And there's a link. We'll put the link in the show notes at therecoveryshow.com/65. But I read part of the article, and it really is, it's interesting. I don't want to sort of give away the punchline, but the patient in question is a member of a 12-step fellowship and has a whole lot of serenity, and apparently his girlfriend finds this disturbing and sends him to this therapist.
Sounds intriguing.
And you have to read it to find out why the patient cured, or how the patient cured his therapist, as it says in the title. Hmm. Why don't you read the one from Harriet next?
All right. Harriet writes, "Dear Spencer, I have been listening to your podcast for the past few months now, all the way from the suburbs of Philadelphia. I found it through iTunes. I've been wanting to write to express my gratitude to you, Swetha, and Kelly for the show for some time now, but in true Al-Anon fashion, was waiting for the most perfect word choice to come to me first." I can relate to that. After a few months of the program, I have decided to write anyway. I see this as progress. Fuck perfection. My pursuit of it has led me down a rabbit hole, which at 40 years old, I am inching my way out one day at a time. I don't have the opportunity to go to as many face-to-face meetings as I would like, as my husband is 31 days clean, and attempting to go to his 90 meetings in 90 days, and we have two little children, and I work. So your podcast has become very important to me, and I try to listen to it daily if possible. I feel that it keeps me connected and focused on my own growth, and it is a launching pad for my eventual face-to-face participation in Al-Anon. I especially loved the episodes on detachment, forcing solutions, and self-care. So thank you, all of you, so much for your service. It has been a pivotal tool for maintaining my own sanity. I'm not sure if you covered this or not, but I would love to hear about the challenges of early sobriety for both the addict and the Anon. Sincerely, Harriet.
Thanks, Harriet. And that's that, again, good topic suggestion. We have not, as far as I know, talked about it. No. Francine wrote with a question. Hello, Spencer. Just loved binge listening to your podcast when I discovered it. I just did an encore listening of episode 25 on sponsoring because of a situation that has arisen in my program. I've asked someone to be my sponsor, and she told me, I don't give suggestions, I give directions. I give directions which I expect will be followed without question. I researched online and found, while I couldn't find an official Al-Anon comment on sponsoring, I did find this on the AA website. Must the newcomer agree with everything the sponsor says? No. If the sponsor's ideas sound strange or unclear, the newcomer had better speak up and ask questions. Theirs is supposed to be an easy, open relationship in which both parties talk freely and honestly with each other. The AA program is simple, but it didn't seem that way to many of us at first. Often we learned by asking questions at closed meetings or, most especially, in conversations with our sponsors. And Francine continues, I would love for a revisit on sponsoring. Does AA allow sponsees to ask questions, but Al-Anon does not? Thank you. Well, I have to say, Francine, everybody sponsors differently. And that's why it's good to know sort of when you ask somebody to be your sponsor, what their understanding of sponsorship is and what their style of sponsorship is. And I have heard people with a lot of time in the program say, I sponsor in a particular way, and I expect you to do these things. And if you're not going to do those things, then I'm not going to be your sponsor. And I hear that in what, your sponsor said to you. Your sponsor said, this is how I sponsor. And, basically, if you don't like it, go somewhere else. I mean, and that might not have been explicit, but that's what I hear. That is certainly not the way I sponsor. And I don't think that, I would want a sponsor who felt that way. I think also it depends where you are in your program. And, if you're early in your program, having somebody who is very clear about, how they view the program being worked and gives direction perhaps, may be helpful or it may not be. But not everybody sponsors that way, in my experience. You have any thoughts on that, Maria?
I guess I would just basically ditto what you just said, Spencer, that hasn't really been my experience, that's how sponsoring works, that you're not allowed to ask questions. But I don't know, and I'm sure it is possible that everyone has a different style, but... I guess that's also, one of those things, like, that's why we're free to choose our own sponsors. And if we find someone whose style doesn't work for us, we're free to choose someone else. But yeah.
Yep. Okay. We got one iTunes review. Ty says, great podcast, liked the flow of it and needed this as another way to get more out of my treatment. Thanks, Ty. iTunes and reviews and ratings do make us easier to find by those in need, and we just heard from at least one person who said, I found you on iTunes. So we want to continue to be findable. If you haven't given us a rating or a review, if you would like to, please go do so. Thank you. Let's see. The Recovered podcast, which we heard from Mark earlier in this show, Mark has his own podcast, Recovered, which focuses on 12-step recovery, mostly in AA, with Al-Anon participation, as they say. He is planning to do another 12-hour podcast, which is, he did this last year in honor of, in memory of his son who lost his life to the disease of addiction. And raising money to support a local treatment center at which his son volunteered when he was in early recovery. So we'll be giving you a little more details about that as we get closer to the day. Basically, he did it in 12 one-hour segments, each with a different set of guests who maybe talked a little bit about their story. And he also will have interviews with people at the local treatment center about how the center works and how it provides its services to its clients. It doesn't cost you anything to listen to the recovery show, but we do have expenses, which run about $60 a month. You can help to support us and keep us on the web and in your ear in a couple of ways. We have a donation button on the website where you can support us directly, just like Martha, Harriet, and Diane did, and thank you very much for that, Martha, Harriet, and Diane. We've also put together a list of recovery-related books, and if you click on the books link at the top of any of our web pages, and you can order one of these books from Amazon, then we get a small commission on everything you order from Amazon in that same session. So, go crazy. Buy lots of stuff. And help support the show. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and it does help to keep us on the air. In any case, thank you for your support in whatever form you give it, including just listening to us. We are here for you. I want to close the show with the song Bowl of Oranges by Bright Eyes. And this is a sort of a quirky little song, but it does seem to be about hope. And these are lyrics. They're somewhere late-ish in the song, although it ends with this sort of extended, very quiet instrumental segment that I probably won't play. So that's how I learned the lesson that everyone's alone and your eyes must do some raining if you're ever going to grow. When crying doesn't help, you can't compose yourself. It's best to compose a poem, an honest verse of longing, or a simple song of hope. And the song has some examples of situations in it where somebody finds hope in maybe in connection with other people, which is how Al-Anon works.
The rain had started tapping on the window near my bed. There was a loophole in my dreaming, so I got out of it. And to my surprise, my eyes were wide and already open. Just my nightstand and my dresser, where those nightmares had just been. So I dressed myself and left them out into the gray streets. But everything seemed different and completely new to me. The sky, the trees, houses, buildings, even my own body. And each person I encountered, I couldn't wait to meet. And I came upon a doctor who appeared in quite poor health. I said, there's nothing that I can do for you, you can't do for yourself. He said, oh yes, you can, just hold my hand, I think that that would help. So I sat with him a while, then I asked him how he felt. He said, I think I'm cured. No, in fact, I'm sure of it. Thank you, stranger, for your therapeutic smile.
Thank you for listening, and please keep coming back. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If we did not talk about a problem you are facing today, feel free to contact us so we can talk about it in a future episode. May understanding, love, and peace grow in you one day at a time.
So that's how I learned the lesson that everyone's alone. And your eyes must do some raining if you're ever gonna grow. But when crying don't help, you can't compose yourself. It's best to compose a poem, an honest verse of longing, or a simple song of hope. That's why I'm singing, baby, don't worry, cause now I got your back. And every time you feel like crying, I'm gonna try and make you laugh. And if I can, if it just hurts too bad, then we'll wait for it to pass. And I will keep you company for those days so long and black. And we'll keep working on the problem we know we'll never solve. Of love's uneven remainders, our lives are fractions of a whole. But if the world could remain within a frame like a painting on a wall, then I think we'd see the beauty, then we'd stand staring in awe at our still lives posed like a bowl of oranges, like a story told.